Blog Talk Radio.
The Hermetic Hour for Thursday, March 22nd, 2012, and I am your host, Poke Runyon. Tonight we feature a discussion with Ed Fitch and Rusty Wizard calling in on the marriage of paganism, witchcraft, and ceremonial magic seen in the revival of the 1970s Order of the Temple of Astarte in the 21st century. And we'll talk about how this all got started, what our original goals were, and what influenced the OTA to attempt a modern synthesis of Victorian-era Gnostic and Rosicrucian magical systems with the more shamanic and earth-oriented neo-pagan movement. And now this will be an eye-opener to newbies who often have no idea what the real differences between Wicca and magic are, or how much one owes to the other. So, as we said, tune in and find out what's going on in strange dark blue rooms in California, in Texas, and in Georgia. It's magic, and we're just finished our Nuptia vernal equinox ceremony in both Montserrat in California and in Austin, Texas, and we just finished it in Cummins, Georgia, and so we'll discuss that and how it went. And Ed, are you there?
I am here and listening.
Yeah. Now, let me, for those of you who don't know, and I think everybody does, but for those of you who don't know, Ed Fitch is I think he's probably the ranking, next to Ray Buckland, he's the ranking elder in the Gardnerian tradition in this country, and he's a noted author in the Grimoire of Shadows, and he is one of the originators of American neo-pagan Wiccan movements, and author of The Pagan Way, and spokesman for the witchcraft movement, and of course he's a member of the OTA, and has been for years. So Ed, tell us how that ceremony went there in Austin.
Very well indeed. We did an outdoor ritual, spent a good while talking it over in advance, exactly what would be going on. I had prepared scripts for everybody involved in it. And we spent a good bit of the time setting up the ceremonial area, the hinge. And when it began going, myself, I, acting as kind of a mentor, I just kind of stepped back and let the others carry it. And they did a very, very good job of it. So I am impressed by the spirit. What is interesting is that there is a lot of enthusiasm and eagerness to see what can be done and what sort of magic can be worked, and just to get in touch with the old ways. And as a matter of fact, everybody commented afterwards that, yes, they were getting a sense of something that was very, very old and very, very good indeed.
Well, your compatriot, John, Rusty Wizard, is right there, and he's on the line. And Rusty, tell us how this thing went from your perspective, and how you prepared for it, and what you did, and let's hear from you.
Well, hi, Ed, and hi, folks. We met at Ed's house and got a group together that was really interested in Hoke's book, Seasonal Rites of Baal and Astarte, and we decided to set up for the nuptiary, and we went and set up the hinge with tiki torches, and we put up planetary signs on the hinges and roped it up, and I ended up going to Home Depot, and I got a PVC pipe for the maypole. It was like 10 feet tall, and I had them cut it in half for me so I could fit it in my car, and I had a connector for the PVC pipe, and then I got an umbrella stand and stuck the PVC pipe in the umbrella stand, and we stuck some colored ribbons with tape to the PVC pipe, and we had a and I also got a bouquet of decorative flowers sticking the top of the PVC pipe. So we had a maypole and a hinge, and we had costumes where Ed had plenty of robes in his closet. He's like, I've got plenty of robes. That's what we got here. And then he also had a nice horned helmet for us. It was a Viking helmet that we used, and had fur lining. And we went out. We had highlighted the script. Ed had printed out like five or six copies of the script, and Ed was the Odos. So he narrated the story for us, and then we all took hands and sung our way out to the hinge, and I played the vine, and my wife played the field, and we had some new friends play Baal and Astarte, and we went out there and did the marriage ceremony with the maypole and wrapped them all up and with the ribbons, and while they were reciting the god and goddess lines, and they ripped out of the ribbons, and they had a really great time with that. And then we went out to the hinge and did the communion of the elements, and that was the whole ceremony was very, very beautiful and very, very powerful in my perspective. I believe everybody got a lot out of it. It was very, very magical. It was the mood was right. We had great weather here. It didn't rain on us, and it was cool. When we got finished with the ceremony, we were all talking inside about what our experiences were, and the thing that was very tangible was a particular energy of renewal and very empowering feeling of vibration, of feeling very uplifted afterwards. The god and goddess, maybe not knowing what they got themselves into, they assuming the god forms when they were sitting outside the hinge and watching the field and vine do the communion of the elements, and they eventually joined us also, because it was a small group, so we had the god and goddess come in and take communion as well. And so while they were sitting outside, they definitely felt a presence. Baal, our Baal, said that he felt that there was the god was speaking to him, you know, saying how wonderful this whole thing was. And the goddess, when we were doing the maypole, said that she was feeling this amazing feeling of joy while we were wrapping her in the maypole. So, and Ed did such a terrific job hosting. It was really a wonderful experience for all of us, I thought.
Well, you know, Brian, the fellow that played ball, he said he really felt the ball presence while he was doing that. And the same thing happened here with, with Fredder Ashour, one of our newer members, newer second-degree people. And he played ball here at Montsauvin, and he felt that, he said, oh, boy, I can really feel ballish. And we had to do ours indoors this time because we did have a bad rain situation. And but it worked out. You can do it. You can do it indoors if you have at least a 2-car garage space, and it worked out. One of the things that I said here in the abstract that we were going to cover was what the purpose of all this is, and what the original intent was, and. When we got started back in 1970, ceremonial magic, what we had was we had the OTO and we had the Golden Dawn. That was both of them were kind of dormant at the time in 1970. But they're very Victorian, and they're very ponderous. The rituals are ponderous, and they're very, very talky. They go on and on and on, and Golden Dawn operation, magical operation, will go on for an hour and a half, 2 hours, invocation, whatever. And when I first looked at that, when I had my revelation, and I looked at these things, I thought, gosh, this is awfully ponderous for something that's supposed to be exciting and something that's supposed to be exhilarating. This is awfully ponderous stuff. The witchcraft movement was really dynamic. What was really dynamic back in the 1970s, and Ed, you know this is the case, was the pagan movement. It was just really getting started. And Fred Adams had it, they had this, had Feraferia, which was quite intellectual, but it was very Dionysian, very, exuberant. And your Gardnerian movement, although it was more secretive than Feraferia, it was more shamanic and more, in its own way, exuberant. And I realized that when we got started, we have to somehow or other take this old Victorian ponderous ceremonial magic, and we got to make it come alive. And so my thought was, let's have a pagan ceremonial magic, so this is what we tried to do, and I think we were successful in our own way, but now, of course, it seems like now we're finally, this is the time is really right for this. We had some growth problems in the sense that the pagan movement still couldn't get over the idea that we weren't really pagan. They thought we were, oh, with ceremonial magic, it's got to be that old Christian biblical stuff, if it's the Kabbalah, it's from the Bible. What was it Sarah Cunningham said? That Kabbalah is a biblical disease and no self-respecting Irish witch will have anything to do with it. And Ed, I know you were, got beaten with a Jesus stick when you were a kid, and you kind of took that approach in a way too. But at the same time, you were heavily into Barden. And Barden is ceremonial magic. So we tried to do this, and this is the idea. And I am so happy that people realize now that these ceremonies are fun. They're fun to do. You look at the pictures on our website of the your ceremonies and the ceremonies in Georgia. People are smiling. They're having a grand time. And every one of these ceremonies that we have involves a dance. We dance around the circle in Seven Gates. We dance around the circle in summer. You know, who drinks with me? And then the one we just did, we have the maypole, and we wrap them up in the maypole. And they're exuberant. They're fun, and they don't last more than an hour. So, Ed, what's your feeling about the ceremonial magic and witchcraft together? You know, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, you have been you've pretty well summarized it. I think when you have an exuberant, if you have a spontaneous sort of a feeling to it, it helps out a lot. Everybody gets a lot out of it. And also, you or shall we say, the best of ceremonial magic has come over to kind of the coven model, where a coven is basically an extended family of good friends. And that's what this was a couple evenings ago. Everybody was enjoying themselves and as a matter of fact, feeling a bit of what it's like to be a god for only just a very short period of time. But that very short period of time is very, very impressive and something you will remember for a long, long time afterwards.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this coven model, because we use it. We use it, and, well, we switched over to it. When we first got started, I was all full of my vision, the idea we had that the mirror method, and we had it was a dynamite method for scrying, and so Nelson, you know, was my second in commander, and we got all fired up, and we thought we were going to be an institution. In other words, we thought we would be. Like a church. In other words, we would have a big temple, and we would actually make money, and we would actually have a physical facility, and we'd do all of this, and that's the way we figured we would go, and in a sort of a business-like kind of way, the way a big Christian church would be. We thought we were, and this was 1970. And then we got started, and we got ourselves, a fairly it was a church, but we couldn't raise the dues and the assessments and all enough. Most of our kids were college kids. They couldn't afford to maintain this place, and we were doing this thing on a business model that way to try to make money and try to make a living at it. I finally just realized it wasn't going to work, and I wanted to get married to one of our people anyway and all that. Well, Nelson, it was my fault. I got Nelson into, thinking that we could do this whole thing in a business kind of a way. And so that was what our falling out, when Nelson fell out, and he started an occult shop, and I just thought, with the experience of we coven models what we ought to do. Because magic is a small thing. It involves small groups of people. You can't have a great big herd of people. And for individual temples, no, it has to be small. And therefore, if it's going to be small, a small circle of people working, you can't have big physical facilities, and you can't have the big overhead and all of that. It just doesn't work that way. So I decided, I'll go back to school on the GI Bill, and I got my master's eventually in anthropology, and I decided that the best thing to do is use the coven model. In fact, I even wrote my master's thesis on that. And the rise, magical cults and the rise of paganism in Southern California, and that was my contention, was that the coven model really, really was the way to go with this. And this is exactly what the Gardnerians were doing. It's what Perifaria was doing. And one thing I want to point out about this is that Gordon Melton, and yet I know Ed, you knew Gordon Melton, didn't you, Ed?
Oh, very definitely, quite a gentleman.
Yeah, Well, you remember how he was going to be, he had a doctor of divinity or something or other, but he was also a social, he was also had a sociology degree of some sort. And he wanted to be the chronicler of the neo-pagan movement. He wanted to be the, kind of like a jackleg anthropologist, and he wrote several books, and he collected a lot of information. But he was essentially a Christian minister. And he was a nice guy, and his heart was in the right place, but how many questionnaires did he send out about our finances? Did you ever get one of those, Ed?
No, I can't recall. I might very well have, but this was a while back.
You probably did, because he was mailing out these to all of us in the whole neo-pagan network. He was about, what are your finances? And he had a whole big page full of questions about how we finance this thing. And I kept telling him, I said, Gordy, the pagan movement, the coven model, we're not running this for profit. We're not running this. This is something we do because we love it, and this is something we do with friends. This is not something that we have a facility. We gave that up. We don't have we do it in our homes, and so there is no financial base or anything like this, And finally, he realized that was the case, but it took him quite a while to do it. I think that's the strength of the pagan movement. It's like the Cathars back, before the Pope finally decided to launch a crusade against them. They operated in their homes, and they spread, of course, all over southern France, and the Catholic churches were standing empty. Everybody was being a Cathar. This is back in the Middle Ages, and. So I think that this is the strength of the pagan movement, and this is something that we wanted to do with ceremonial magic, move it into that pagan coven model thing. John, how do you feel about that?
Well, when we talked about doing the associate membership program a while back, the thing that my thing was, I live in Texas, and I really wanted to study magic with you guys and do the operations, do the seasonals, and I had the books, but I felt like, I can't drive out to California every Saturday to do magic classes with folks, and so even though I'd love to be able to do that, it just wouldn't be financially feasible for me. So I remember we were talking both you and I and Lauren, your producer there, and we were saying, how can we put this online? How can we make a training school and virtualize it to where it can be a hub for covens or associate member lodges all over the world, linked back to Mother Lodge in California, so I really think you guys took the ball and ran with that and set up that associate membership website and got the training materials that you guys are developing, and people are getting excited, and he told me that exponentially people are just signing up left and right for this thing because they want to do it in their homes. They know that they can't fly to California. They know they can't drive to California. Some people are lucky enough to be able to do that, but if you're living in, say, Philadelphia, like my friend Vincent, or if you're living in Canada, or if you're living in Georgia or wherever, being able to do it in your home, being connected to a group of people that are like-minded, share experiences, photos, being able to talk about ideas and how to grow the system and get people involved and active in doing it, then we really have something very, very powerful with the tools on the internet. And
yeah.
about the seasonals too. I mean, one thing I went up with the associate membership program. I'm communicating with Michael Downs out in Georgia, and he's posted beautiful pictures of his seasonals on the associate membership website that I may not have ever have seen if I didn't connect with him through the associate membership website. So, and I'm talking with him on there about like what was your experience when after he did the seasonal.
Well, yeah, we're building a network, but each one of these is independent, and each one of them operates basically out of their home. And as far as the financial structure is concerned, and my attitude toward that is, yeah, everybody needs to pay a little bit of dues, and we have it because we got to have that. But we're not going to be like some organizations and charge more and more and more the higher you get and all that kind of stuff. No, our idea is for this thing to be. It's yours. Naturally, if you're going to follow the outline of the tradition, of course, and you're going to follow in order to be the OTA, to be the church, you need to follow it. And we have a structure, and that's good. But still, we want to make sure that this coven model is the way it's going to go. I really don't want to see somebody try to operate one of these things, one of these chapters, as a facility-oriented church. In other words, that's not what we're trying to do. Speaking of Fred or Osiris, he is in the chat room right now, I want him to call in, of course, because he just did the seasonal in Georgia, and he just put the pictures up on the website, and they're absolutely fantastically good. And we want to find out how his, what his experience was and all. Obviously, it was good. They're all smiling. Frater Osiris, are you there? I guess he's still in the chat room. So anyway, Fred or Sarah, go ahead and call in, will you? Call in because we want to get you on, get you involved in this. Definitely. By the way, while we're waiting for him to call in, let me say this. Now, you start looking at this on the website and whatever. Those of you who can get in to see it, you have to be a member, an associate member. That's easy enough to do if you want to be one. However, there is a certain amount of equipment involved in ceremonial magic and the OTA. Not as much as in the Golden Dawn. You don't have to build up, it's not that much. But we do have equipment, and it should be built, in the proper way. So I have some, Fred or Osiris, are you there?
Hey, folks, how you doing?
Oh, well, we're doing just great. We're doing our after nuptia assessment here. And we just got done looking at the print of pictures you have on the members' website, and this is just fantastic. So tell us, how did it go, and give us your thoughts on this.
Yes, nuptia after nuptia. I'm exhausted. We had a great time today. Put a lot of work into it. This one, very, very exciting concept. The mystic marriage, the hieroscamos, the marriage of heaven and earth. And I think I got kind of obsessed and put lots of work into it. Hidden socket in the back circle, and put together a Asherah pole or a maypole in March, Asherah pole to go in there, and definitely yeah, here I am finding myself on the other side.
How big was that maypole, Mike? That was like that was enormous. What was it like? 20 feet tall or something?
It's about eight. Yeah, it's 18.5 feet tall, and it's a young oak tree. It came from the other side of the fence. There's kind of a little lonely hill in the neighborhood here. That's so I went out and talked to it a little bit, and it seemed to be willing. And so,
it looked magnificent.
It's still up. It's still over here. We've got it kind of near the pavilion of the gods. It's kind of a flag, so it's all still wrapped up.
I had to cut mine down to 7 feet, 8 inches. Unfortunately.
To get it into work.
This was really absolutely fabulous. Now, something I noticed too about your magic circle. This is fascinating. In ours that we have out here, we have the astrological all the astrological material on the backside, and then we have just the elemental material on the top side.
Yep.
So we turn it, but you got them both combined, and that's terrific.
Yeah, what happened was when I decided I would make a magic circle as a piece of ceremonial magic equipment, it's like, well, I really like the idea that what the OTA seems to do well is part of the fantastic energy of the model that you don't necessarily see in pure ceremonial magic groups like the Golden Dawn, or necessarily, pure nature worship groups, is the back and forth in between them where the equipment comes out every season and gets recharged in that nature bath and then goes back. And anyway, so when I started to design it, though, it kind of brought back a lot of dissatisfaction that I had with the Golden Dawn correspondences, which is part of the legacy that the OTA, has inherited. I don't want to go, that's part of the legacy.
Well, some of those correspondences are forced, you don't blame it too much on Mathers and Westcott. You blame it on Trithemius and Agrippa because they were trying to put all this together. And originally, they made that first synthesis back in the 16th century. They made that first synthesis, and they had to. They never could reconcile whether Raphael went in Haud or whether he went in Tipperet. So Mathers, when he created the Enochian correspondences, he fudged and forced a little bit. You kind of have to. But one of the things that we have had, and I know this is sounding technical here, we're talking about all our exuberance and their, and whatever they are. But Golden Dawn's astrology, as you know, is sidereal.
Yep.
And ours is tropical. And yet, it is. Ours is tropical, and we have good reasons for that, and they had good reasons for keeping their side. But, actually, we got that resolved with this Soma Sophia thing.
Uh-huh.
We do. We've got the two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have it resolved, and this is when that magic circle of yours, I'm going to suggest the next step is put all the degrees around it. Go ahead and tick off.
Go ahead and tick off all the degrees, and then you'll be able to combine both the sidereal and the tropical systems.
Well, maybe we'll see. It's got the
some more work for you.
But anyway, the on this equipment thing, this is intimidating for a lot of people. And so consequently, when we come out with the second edition of Solomon's Magic, I really want to use some of what you guys have come up with in the way of building stuff. Naturally, we'll give you credit for it because you guys have really taken some of the things that I kind of skimmed over, and you've really done a great job with them. And you know, we don't want this to be intimidating. We want this to be fun. And what we're going to try to do, and with your help, we're trying to help these people that aren't quite the craftsmen that we are, to try to help them to get this material, even to the point where we could start, and naturally they'll pay us for our expense or whatever. Just cut, we can make kits for them maybe, or we can certainly make plans that they can follow. What do you think about that?
I think that's a good idea. In the past, one of the things I've done is made posters for the Enochian watchtowers, and I still got a bunch of those. I was thinking, if you're on the Hermetic's main website, and if you will use them in a magical ceremony, and post about it on the website, contact me through the website, and I'll send you some Enochian posters if you.
I'd love to have them. Your tablets, you have your tablets are actually in Enochian, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. This has been something a lot of people don't understand, but tablets, inner order tablets, in other words, tablets you're actually going to use in ceremonies, should have the letter should be in Enochian. And by the way, let me point out that we do in the OTA we do Enochian, we do the Aether system, and we do use it. But the whole system, our whole system, is not Enochian. In other words, we're not. I don't claim. I don't know about you, John, but I don't claim. Or Mike. That we've achieved any kind of a synthesis between regular Kabbalah and Enochian. I don't claim that we have. I know that there's a number of people who have tried, but I'm not sure. So consequently, I try to keep the two systems, together, but not force them together. You follow me?
Oh yeah. I sometimes suspect, when you close a book of Enochian that you've been studying, that everything scrambles and changes inside, so that the next time you open it up, everything's different. It's a very, very strange system. Yeah. And
So you don't want we don't want to give the impression that our version of Kabbalah and our version of that is completely Enochian. It is not. And yet Enochian is very important. I mean, it's in, and we all should be familiar with it, and we should, I'm going to use it, and we do. And anyway, one of the things, though, I'd like to mention, as we get back to Ed here, Gerald Gardner, as I'm sure you know, better than I do. Gerald Gardner was a good friend of Aleister Crowley, and he was also a member of the OTO. And so there was a lot of Solomonic magic that Gardner had originally in Gardnerianism. Do you think that I know Alex Sanders emphasized it, but do you think that sort of came out of it, got de-emphasized in Gardnerianism, or does it still hold?
Well, in what I would call proto-Gardnerianism, about the time that old Gerald wrote a book called Higher Magic's Aid, and some of his other works, like the Book of the Art Magical, that there was a heavy influence there, but then he just directed things off into another direction and simplified it considerably. Also, he worked with one Doreen Valiente. He was a very, very talented woman that, I think during World War II, she was with British Naval Intelligence and had done quite a bit of writing for them, decoding, I believe. And she was very much involved with us. She worked with Gerald for quite a while. So the earlier part of Gardnerianism, not what it's used today, but the early part of it, definitely had those influences. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I know Alexander's, the so-called Alexandrian school, they emphasized it more than the Gardnerians did. But you, as I recall, very early on, were quite fascinated with Franz Barden, and you did work the Bardonian system. You want to tell us about that?
Well, again, Franz Barden, again, I take magic where magic appears, and there are many forms for approaching this sort of thing. Franz Barden had a very good system going. I believe it seemed to be related to the Tibetan, although I could be mistaken. And it worked. It made sense. And here again, you can say if you have a tradition that is 500 years old and doesn't get results, it's no good. But if you have one that's 5 minutes old and you can really light up the house with it, then you've got a good, valid tradition. And I like Franz Barden because he gave specific training. You know, my own magical background largely came from, well, several sources, but Franz was very good because he made it for a logical mind, being Austrian Germanic himself. And my own background, of course, my degree is in physics. So consequently, I needed to be learning this from a scientific standpoint. And Barden is very scientific in his viewpoint and the way that he arranges things. It's a slight leap of the paradigm, but basically it makes a lot of sense. And have things happen, so it works that way. Okay, your comment now.
Yeah, the thing with Barden, the reason why I wanted to get into that was because Barden... for those listening who aren't familiar with it, we did a show on Barden, by the way, and back in the archives, and so if anybody wants to catch up on it, they should. Barden was a hypnotist, for one thing, and put the hypnosis back in magic, which is one of the things that we did. And in fact, I wrote an article for Gnostica magazine back in 1974 called Magic and Hypnosis, which was kind of a landmark thing at its time. It got translated into German and a couple of other languages. But magic, this Renaissance ceremonial magic emphasized scrying, emphasized the dark mirrors and the crystal ball, and it emphasized conjuring spirits and bringing down the angels, and very shamanic and very not so much in a drum beating sort of way, but in the way of having a vision and having communicating with these entities. This is something that the Victorians, the Golden Dawn and the OTO just lost. This they lost it, and essentially why they lost it was that they had a phobia against hypnosis. Not just the Golden Dawn, also the OTO. They had a phobia against hypnosis. And so they lost this visionary quality. That Dee and Kelly had it with Enochian, they had it, and Barden certainly taught it. He knew how to do it, but these old Victorian schools, the Rosicrucian Gnostic Victorian magical school, they didn't have it. They lost it. And that's what I realized, you know, when I, back in 1970, when I almost died and had that vision of mine. I said, hey, this is the business of magic is getting in touch with the spirits and getting in touch with the angels and, you know, actually... actually bringing them up to visual appearances. And this is what Barden has an individual training program to help people do. And this is, of course, what we do in the OTA. And our seasonal ceremonies are very Dionysian and all that. But then, you know, when the rest of the time we're calling down the angels and calling up the spirits, and so this is you might say that we're bringing magic back in the way it was back 500 years ago, and but yet at the same time we have the advantage of using Eastern Tibetan type methods, which by gosh now is D. If John Dee had Barden's book, or if he'd had a good training session with the Tibetans, he would not have needed to hire Edward Kelly. He could have done the whole thing himself. And that's one of the things that we're really... John, Mike, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, one of the things that we did after the ceremony, the seasonal ceremony, after we sat in Ed's living room and talked about the ceremony, Ed was like, "Hey, I've got a magic mirror upstairs. You guys want to go spry?" So we all went upstairs to Ed's room, where he has this this black cloth covering a very large mirror on his wall, and he's like, "I like to keep this mirror covered because it might scare people if they just look at it." You know, so it builds it up. We've got a candlelight going, and he takes the black cloth off, and it's a beautiful, beautiful oval concave mirror that he displays for us. And then each of us took turns scrying into the mirror and seeing how it worked, and Ed like guided us through a session each and learning on how the magic mirror works and getting used to what it does. And it was really interesting how with Ed there giving us guidance and steps on what to expect, was that every single person that did it achieved results immediately. It was really, really amazing to see. Brian did it, Brian's wife did it, and I did it. And each person that did it, they would look into the mirror, and Ed would be like, "All right, you're see a glowing effect inside the mirror. There might be a ball of light there. What is it? And then for me, it was like I'd had a little bit too much mead, probably, from the ceremony. It took a little while there to get something going, but the glow started happening. And then what I noticed was it shifted from the mirror to the inside of your head, and all of a sudden your mind latches on to an image. And for me, it was a flower. Okay, a flower popped into my head, and Ed's like, "What do you see?" I said, "I see a flower." Okay, and then it went from seeing blobs and optical effects in the mirror to being inside your own mind and your imagination just turning on, like in very vivid color. And then it guided it through, like what else do you see? And so I was like, "Oh, I see," you know. And you're kind of guided into this hypnotic effect of going on a shamanic journey almost. And we did it for about 5 minutes, and Ed was like, "All right, let's not go too deep now." Everybody was able to do it. And that's what's really, really interesting about the mirror effect. It's just that people think that they're going to see something, well, at least with a concave mirror, that they're going to see something in the mirror. But it seems like the mirror helps, like, make the focal point for you to drop the mind and get into the subconscious mind through a hypnotic technique.
Absolutely. And one of the things that that we do, and, you know, you just did, is that we use in Yasod and with Goetia to begin with, we use the facial reflection, the morphing of the facial reflection through the sigil of the spirit to get you started. But after that, after you work Goetia that way, then you go in, when you work in the higher spheres, you don't use that reflection. You can, but then you do just exactly what we're talking about. The facial reflection method is a very effective method to start with. But you don't need that method to make use of the magic mirror. And just like you say, this is similar to you closing your eyes and visualizing on front screen. And you know, when some people, when you're training people in visualization, there's a lot of people who just don't visualize behind their eyelids, behind their closed eyelids. They visualize somewhere in the back of their head. And I know I did, and it took me a while. I had to get myself on front screen, so to speak. And because I'm an artist, and I tend to cook the thing in the back of my head and then put it on the paper. And I talked to Fred Adams, who was, you know, a master magician, and he said the same thing. He said, yeah, cook it in the back of my head and manifest it on the paper. And so consequently, you take a person like this, and they try to scry, they have to train themselves to scry. But if you do it, if everybody, you know, just relaxes and gets that perspective, yeah, you can do it. However, sometimes it does. With some people, it's going to require some training. And in fact, we insist on, you know, on training. One of the main reasons for insisting on training in this is because you want to be able to contact a spirit and hold on to the spirit and communicate with the spirit and not just have something just sort of coming in, at random. So this is why the training, Tratakam Yoga and self-hypnosis and all of this, and especially, see, the reason for self-hypnosis training is that way you can, the spirit can speak through you. It's very difficult for the spirit, and I've found it in experience, that it's difficult for people to channel until they've had self-hypnotic training. In other words, putting themselves under with their own voice. Then, once they get the spirit, they can channel the spirit. Some people do it naturally, but training helps. And the whole process is very, very, very rewarding. By the way, I want to just mention that Dr. X, Mark, is putting together the first version of the Multiverse Receiver, which he's calling the Jove Radio. And we will be able to contact the planet Jupiter, or at least we'll be able to listen to the planet Jupiter, and we'll know that it is the planet Jupiter, and then we can put we'll get Jupiter on the observatory on a scope and listen to Jupiter at the same time. Peter Solomon and I just did a UFO operation. That's the good spirit of Jupiter, and that was quite powerful. So we will be electronically and visually in contact with Jupiter before too long. We have about 5 minutes left. Frater Osiris, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I want to ask a quick question, Father Thigpen. Okay, about the pacing of temple workings, how often do you think that you ought to do and evocations? Like what, you know, how often are you, another daemon comes up just about every 5 days.
You're working, look, here's this business of do as I say, do not as I do, you know. Now, I've been doing this path-working video, and I've been up at Mitch's, you know, and every day, and then tomorrow morning, I'm going to have to go home tonight, finish coloring up some graphics, and I'll be up to 1 o'clock in the morning. Then I got to drive for an hour and get up to by 9:30, and I got to be there, you know, on the computer with Mitch. So I don't have time to do meditation tomorrow morning. And yet, ideally, you should have, you know, you should take about 15 minutes, I would say, if you're really going to work on yoga. And, you know, you have 15 minutes a day if you can. But if your work schedule is tough, then do it a couple times a week, you know, at least. I found that I laid off it for, gosh, a couple of months when I was in an intense program. And you have to kind of almost, you know, just really relearn it. You know, you have to reteach yourself. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I've noticed that if you're away for a while, it's like a bicycle. You don't forget, but it does take a while to get back in the saddle.
It does, but I'll tell you something that I just discovered, and that is we were doing affirmations, 22 affirmations, and then 22 cycles of pranayama. And finally, I've gotten to the point now where I can combine the two. It's a little dicey, but if you got a good, you know, rosary mala or whatever, you can, and you concentrate on it, you can do it. You can combine the two, and using, you know, super sound in and regular sound out, and then just count on the void, you know, with pranayama. Don't bother to count otherwise. Did your affirmation. When you do your affirmations, you know, sound and super sound in and out, and then count on the voids, and you can combine the two, and that makes it a lot faster. But you know, you got to train it. So it helps. Anyway, we've got to get. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I've been anxious to get this new program on the website so we can get the yoga with the graphics and with all the stuff on the website for you so you can get into it. And I will definitely be working on that, doing it. But right now, of course, I got to finish this pathworking video, and this thing is going to be really good. Anyway, we're getting close to the wire, and next week we will be back on, and next week we will discuss basically setting up both the yoga program and the hypnotic and training. But, you know, the various aspects of training that we really should do and that really should do for ourselves. And so we'll discuss magical training next week. And, you know, and the debt we owe to Barton, the debt we owe to Bill Gray, the debt we owe to Ed Fitch, and, you know, and all of the various things that have gone into this. What?
Thanks, Ed, and thanks, Poke. And, and while I'm at it, you know, happy equinox, happy spring, everybody.
This was quite an equinox and all over the country, and I really, really, really feel I'm really proud of this, proud of you guys. I mean, you did a great job. And so anyway, let's get together next week, and we'll talk about training, seeing as how we've been talking about all the good stuff, and then we'll tell you next week how to get there. So next week, magical training, and Ed, you want to call in on that one? Because, you know, you are a magical trainer par excellence.
I'll do my best. Yes, I will definitely be there.
Yeah, same thing with John and Mike, with Frater Heracles and Frater Osiris. You guys call in, and we'll have a magical training session next week.
Way to go.
Okay.
Good magic.
All right. Meanwhile, good magic.
Good magic.
Good magic.